from the North St. Alexis traffic desk. The accident that was causing some backup heading into town from the Sugarland area, 69 southbound at Kirkwood. It has finally cleared. Traffic is recovering. Over on I-10 westbound, as you get to the Beltway, stop vehicle over to the left shoulder. And on the Southwest Freeway, sitting on the HOV lane northbound at West Lane, there's a stop vehicle there. Showers this afternoon with a high of 74, 60 degrees right now. From the Trailer Wheel and Frame Weather Desk, Amelia Escobar, Sports Radio 610.
We are discussing ways that Bill O'Brien can prove his popularity in the city of Houston. 965 on the DWIattorney.com text line at 713-572-4610 says, the problem is O'Brien's not good at anything, and the offense has been terribly run under his coaching. Do y'all truly believe he is capable of out-coaching the best coaches in the league just to get to the Super Bowl, let alone win it all? I think that hits on one of the big issues, which is you would love to be able to go back and say, okay, because you can have games like the wildcard game against Indianapolis, but the dearth of big wins by the franchise in general, but especially recently. And I honestly think if they were able to win a few of these games, like if they were able to pull off both the Patriots game and Seattle, or heck, even just one of them in 2017, I legitimately think you can go back and say, hey, because I think people forget the feeling heading into the Patriots game in week three in 2017. They got out to a horrible start. Deshaun came in. He looked kind of shaky. They played a game 4 days later where they, you know, got a little bit fortunate to win the game. They were playing with basically duct tape all over the place offensively. That game was a week and a half later. We had no idea what to expect. They were huge underdogs heading into that game, and they should have won that game. Yeah. It would be nice to sit here and say, listen, this playoff performance or this performance late in the year was bad, but listen, our coach is one who has proven he can win some big games. But you need some big games to actually, you actually need to win some of those games to actually point back to. That's the issue.
So the question is, okay, can he out-coach people? Can he out-coach Bill Belichick? Bill Belichick's not even, like, we need to excise the Patriots from a lot of these equations because it's been proven time and time again that, for the most part, you don't out-coach Bill Belichick. It's not like he was out-coached last year in the Super Bowl. So, and he certainly wasn't out-coached. Yeah, you don't out-coach Bill Belichick. Sometimes you get lucky. Let's see. Could he out-coach Andy Reid?
Well, they beat Andy Reid's team with Brock Osweiler quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that moves the meter necessarily.
Could he outcoach Sean Payton?
Well, what's funny? The Texans,
he did, didn't he?
He did. The Texans in one of the weirder games you'll see of the last like decade with Brian Hoyer quarterback against Breeze in 2015, they basically handled the Saints.
Okay. Can he outcoach Sean McVay? If people just even bypass the entire discussion about like just how good is Sean McVay as a football coach, I mean he's had less than two full seasons here. So I don't know. They'll find out Sunday. If I took the second half of the Rams season compared to the first, I wouldn't be sitting here saying like, "Wow, Sean McVay is the most incredible coach who ever lived." I think he's doing a good job with Jared Goff. Don't get me wrong, but he's just not there right yet. Where I think he needs to prove a couple more things conclusively before I sit here saying, like, oh, he's up there in that same category as Andy Reid or these other guys.
Again, if the Rams win their next two games, I believe people will view Sean McVay as the next Don Shula.
Yeah. Well, except he's more of a...
That's my big take
on Shula. Shula was a defensive-minded guy.
Who else in America this morning is saying Sean McVay is the next Don Shula? I can guarantee you can scan all the sports radio airwaves wherever you want. Nobody is saying that.
Is Sean McVay as good as Glenn S. Pop Warner was?
I'm trying to think of another comparison for Sean McVay, just for the sake of it not being Don Shula. No, I know it's off the top of my head. It's really difficult. I mean, I think you could theoretically say John Gruden, right?
Oh yeah,
because Gruden was young. He got off to a great start, and then everything fell apart. It turns out he's a giant a-hole.
Here's the thing about Gruden. See, McVay is already ahead of where Gruden was because Gruden did not win. Although he came close in Oakland, he won only when he went to the second place and he took over a ready-made team.
But he got traded.
Yeah, not to take any.
Wait, he didn't win when he was. Well, he didn't ultimately win, right? But he got that team like he turned that team around.
Yeah, he got Rich Gannon to win MVP, which is like getting Jared Goff to play well is essentially the same thing based off of what I've seen from him thus far.
With the help of the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative, Belco. Let's remember, no team had more Belco dudes in San Francisco. Well, the Oakland Raiders, San Francisco had a bunch too.
Don't get me wrong. John Gruden was a very good coach to me the first time around in Oakland. but he didn't win a Super Bowl. Under my hypothetical here, if the Rams win their next two games, they will by definition win the Super Bowl, and Sean McVay will be way ahead of where Gruden was in Oakland. This is a pretty rare thing, like at this age, to be this young of a head coach and to win a Super Bowl.
What I'll say is Sean McVay has a chance to become this generation's Lincoln Riley. That's what I'll say. He's that's what he's shooting for right now. Just do something in the postseason. You haven't truly done anything in the postseason.
Yeah, man. You're nothing unless you win a Super Bowl. Everything's terrible. I'm a nihilist.
That's right.
I think ultimately, though, with this whole conversation about O'Brien improving his popularity, it all comes down to in-season stuff. Like, nothing's going to change, I don't think, dramatically up until, you know, from now until late August.
The problem was that, like, Bill O'Brien's best chance was when they played the Patriots in the playoffs a couple years back. And the problem was that Brock Osweiler was the quarterback.
Yes. But
in terms of game plan,
he did have
offensive
a good game
and
plan.
Defensive game, what's that?
He had a good game plan.
Yeah, he did have no a good issue. Game plan. Right. It's just that Brock Osweiler throws consecutive interceptions in the second half when your defense kind of has Tom Brady on the ropes. Tom Brady's throwing up prayers of passes. Frankly, in ways that you hardly ever see Tom Brady throwing up a prayer of a pass. Like, almost, you know what I'm saying, Paul? Like, Brady was blindly throwing the ball into the air because he thought he might have a good matchup in that game. That's how well it was going, except that Brock Osweiler was your quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was desperate. AJ Boye could have had another interception that he dropped in that game. He did not play well. They got after him. The problem was the offense wasn't able to deliver. And, I mean, here's the other thing. No one's going to take the Texans seriously ever or Bill O'Brien seriously here unless they win a game in the regular season against a good team when they're at full strength. And I know, like,
when that team is the opponent's at full strength.
Well, yeah. I mean, and again, they've done that before where they beat an undefeated Bengals team and they were shorthanded. They've had some wins that are noteworthy, but none of them you've seen, okay, they've got all of their guys. They played one of the big boys, like the Patriots, the Steelers when the Steelers weren't an absolute mess like they are right now, the Chiefs this season, teams like that, the Packers, like in their history, when those games happen, when that team that they're playing against is at a high level or playing at a high level, they get spanked.
Can you make the argument that this is the best part of who they play in 2019 with their schedule? Because if you look at the opponents the Texans have next year, I mean, you have a lot of big-time teams that they're facing, which is scary.
You're saying the best part of the 2019 schedule is that they have that challenge? Is it
the best part in context of this conversation of winning big games is that they play a hard schedule?
Oh, okay.
Because if they're gonna win some football games next year, almost by definition, they will have to beat some of these teams: Kansas City, New England, the Saints.
How many people, if that were to go down, where they win a couple of those games, would actually say to themselves, "Oh, wow, Bill O'Brien is actually taking a step in the right direction," though? Because I do think that we have gotten to a point of cynicism among some fans with Bill O'Brien, where even if he does win in situations like that, they'll be like, well, playoffs. And that sucks for O'Brien if that's the case.
Well, I mean, it doesn't really suck for O'Brien because that's the standard anywhere. Until you really genuinely have playoff success,
but here,
they're not going to... I support that notion among fans in terms of, like, okay, yeah, now
holding to a high standard,
you can do it when it really genuinely counts.
Okay,
because we've had enough years where, like, hey, the Rockets have a winning record versus San Antonio in the regular season, and you see what happens when it gets to the postseason. It's a completely different deal. So I get that and I understand that, but it is, I guess, partly the AFC South has been Bill O'Brien's undoing in a lot of respects over this last, in terms of perception, just because he's always got that weighing against them. There's always going to be a Brian T. Smith asking the question about the AFC South and Bill O'Brien getting angry about that. Until you beat some of the bona fide contenders, yeah, you're going to have that.
Time now for Matt Takes on a Football Friday. Not that I'm rooting for people to die, but I can't believe this Prince Philip is still alive. This is remarkable. How is this guy still alive?
Guy's a stud, too. Have you ever watched The Crown on Netflix? You're like, hey, you go get him, you player.
He's 97 years old, and I bring this up because he was involved in a car accident. He's okay.
He was?
Yeah,
he was driving.
Yeah, he was driving.
Really?
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
He actually was driving? He was driving, yeah. And he
freaking Royals, man.
He has been seen driving once in a while, which I respect the guy. 97, still driving. Like,
no, I don't respect him. Get that old coupe out from behind the wheel. That's a danger to society. These limeys and their royalty love. It's BS. He's gonna kill someone, and he would get off scot free. Like, oh, bollocks, Dad. Sorry, I ran you over. awful.
I have a possibly very ignorant question. How much of the medical care that they receive is creating how long Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip
have
lived?
100%. I mean, yeah, they find homeless people and they probably, you know, grind them up into a fine paste and then they inject them into the royals.
And back in the day, it would have been, you know, an ambitious younger person might have slipped a little cyanide in the queen's. Like, that's just how they did. They killed each other.
That's a good point.
Left and right. No big deal.
Now
we're all civilized and because they don't have, like, what's the incentive, really? What's the incentive, really, to want to have the crown right now? Like, so I can continue to control nothing?
Yes.
Like, there'll be more scrutiny on me. I won't get to go out and do as much fun stuff. And I will have no genuine power. Screw that. After watching The Crown, I swear, I don't think I would want the job, man.
What's the downside?
Because there's so much scrutiny, they don't have lives of their own. Worry about the tabloid and everything. Like, yeah, you're super rich, but you don't get to enjoy it the same way a normal super rich person would, because you have the pressure of upholding the image of the crown and everything, and it's a heavy cross to bear. Look, don't cry a river for him or anything, but it's not all that you would think of in your fantasy mind, especially Prince Philip, because Prince Philip was he was the prince of one of those tiny European
Wales.
Countries. It wasn't it wasn't even in the UK. It was like Switzerland or something. Hmm. But you know, like his family was like, all right, hey, we're gonna kill you. So he's like, hey, I'm gonna get the hell out of here, and he goes and marries the queen. Which, by the way, he'd been having a correspondence with her from the time where he was a young man and she was like 13 years old. Kind of pervy. But, so he ends up marrying her, but he's kind of out still living his Playboy lifestyle, and it got to be kind of a thing. Mm. But that was back in the day when the crown and the government can control the government a little bit more. So there's always this tension. You know, you're talking 1950s where the standards are a little bit different, and you've got this Playboy crown out going to lunch clubs where there's kind of quasi hookers hanging around. It's a bunch of weird stuff there. So that's Prince Philip. He's a Playboy.
Think about this as you drive into work on a football Friday, along with takes like Sean McVay being the next Don Shula. Think about this. They have been married for 71 years.
Good for them.
They've been married for 71 years. That's unbelievable. Thank you.
There is a song in Mary Poppins that's called Feed the Birds, Feed the Birds, Toppins, something, Toppins, Toppins.
I don't remember that one.
Reason. It's a big time song there. Well, I have my own variant of the song. It's called Kill the Birds, Cut Off Their Heads, Cut Off. I hate birds. I think all birds are worthless outside of the birds of prey, like eagles and hawks and things of that nature. Pigeons, seagulls, sparrows, crows, ravens. I say kill them all. They just carry disease. They're horrible. They're worthless. They don't provide anything to society. Well, also, they are interrupting key tennis matches. If you were staying up to watch the big-time tennis match between Garbine Muguruza and Johanna Konta at 9 o'clock yesterday in the Australian Open, you wouldn't be able to watch it because a long match before it delayed it. But the court that they tried to move the match to was so covered in seagull poop that they actually could not have the match, and they had to wait until 3 in the morning to actually begin the match. Birds, worthless, terrible, pooping on your cars, flying into your windows, carrying disease, spreading everything. They're horrible. Hate birds.
Don't they also kill things that are bad for humans?
That's like a really important part of the ecosystem. Man.
They kill bees. Oh, thanks. You killed all the bees. Thanks, birds.
I don't think they kill bees, do they?
I think something else is killing the bees.
It's not humans.
What happens without birds in the ecosystem?
I think very bad things.
A lot of them are...
No one's flying around anymore.
Well,
that's for damn sure.
A lot of them are scavengers, so they're cleaning up the roadkill and everything, helping with that. You just want roadkill to sit out there forever?
Yeah.
Like vultures. Everybody hates the vulture, but nobody also likes carrion. But
that makes sense.
Yeah.
That birds clean the environment.
Yeah.
What else do they do?
What else do they do?
They poop on your cars.
They eat worms. Yeah.
Worms. Poor worms. What did worms ever do to them?
They eat berries, and then when they go and poop the berries out elsewhere, those seeds grow, so they help spread horticulture.
But those are my berries. I want those are not for the birds. Those are for me.
I don't like this take of yours about berries or birds.
I hate birds.
I have nothing against birds. I mean,
look at me. I've got wings. Go kill yourself.
Yeah, you're so woke, Mike, loving birds. Trying to use this radio show
to
get women by claiming to love birds. Matt Hasselbeck divulged something curious to The Ringer, which is that according to him, this season, 2018, mm-hmm. Somebody called old-ass Matt Hasselbeck.
This is incredible.
One playoff-contending NFL team called asking whether he was, quote, in shape and available to sign.
Okay, we got to figure out who this is.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't understand why would you call Matt Hasselbeck?
Matt Hasselbeck last played in 2015, I'm guessing.
It was, yes. Maybe. Yeah, he's been at ESPN since 2016. Okay.
I would guess the Seattle Seahawks because Russell Wilson has essentially had no backup quarterback for much of the season. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they just signed Paxton Lynch to a futures contract.
I think they did, yes, okay. Yesterday, actually.
That would make sense. And they've got a history with him in the organization, obviously. I think, was Matt Hasselbeck's last game the poop game here? The diarrhea game?
I'm guessing he played at some point.
Yeah,
after that,
with the Colts?
Yeah, remember when Matt Hasselbeck beat the Texans?
I do.
Well, quote, Chuck Pagano.
Thursday night.
Chuck Pagano said that Matt Hasselbeck was, quote, literally on his deathbed, which is untrue because if it was literally his deathbed, he would have died on the bed.
You think it was the Eagles? Because they had the Wentz situation. They have Sudfeld backing up those guys.
He said playoff contending. It could have been the Titans.
Yeah, it could have been the Titans.
How about the Washington Redskins with all the dead quarterbacks that they've had this season, too? They were technically in the race.
Yeah, I bet maybe the Redskins.
It's probably most likely a team that didn't get into the playoffs now that I think about it and you guys mentioned that.
Yeah.
But I think Tennessee and the Redskins are good guesses.
Okay. It wasn't the Texans, though.
No, I don't think so.
They were not like, well, listen, Brandon, we've had you for 3 years now, but we're actually going to take a flyer on old-ass Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah.
Who's calling him and asking, like, the next question, because I guess they asked if he was in shape and everything. He can be in good shape like he's been hitting the elliptical. There's no way in hell he's been going out and throwing routes for like twice a week, right?
Probably not.
There's a little bit more than just being in good cardiovascular shape. You got to have your arm in shape.
Sometimes on ESPN, you know, they have those little fake passes that they'll throw 5 yards to each other to show that, yeah, we like football. We played football.
So I can see a Redskins front office executive sitting at home and watching one of those little segments and seeing Hasselbeck nail a 7-yard lob on a TV set and be like, he's still got it. He's our guy.
I think it was probably one of those two teams.
Okay.
Brett Favre, terrible take on SiriusXM NFL radio. He said if he were the Eagles deciding between Wentz and Foles moving forward, he prefers Nick Foles. Quote, you know the old saying, dance with one who brung you? I don't want to come across as knocking Carson Wentz at all because I'm not. I think a lot of him, but I would go with Nick Foles. I really would. They're both good. I really like what I've seen from both guys, but in particular Nick Foles, especially considering the circumstances in which he has come in, Nick Foles to me is more of a Brady-esque quarterback. Very limited in what he can do, but very, very good in what he does.
Huh.
He's a pure pocket passer, and he's great at dishing it out, and he has proven that he's clutch.
Who is this?
Brett Favre.
Oh, all right.
Brett Favre.
How about Favre saying very limited in what he can do?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Coming from Brett Favre, why on earth? Very limited.
Brett Favre just showed up, remember?
Boy, I'll tell you what. You know he's going to hate Brett Favre now, Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman's betting against the Patriots. And
yeah.
A very limited in what he can do, Tom Brady. I wonder if he just meant athletically. He's got to mean athletically. It's like Brett Favre doesn't always say exactly what he's trying to say, I think. And
it's those pills.
I guess if you're Brett Favre looking at Tom Brady, though, you're thinking, okay, he's not that good of an athlete with his feet. He doesn't have a Brett Favre cannon, I'll tell you that much. And so he's very limited in what he can do. Those are strong words.
Yeah, this seems like a very much a clutch gene sort of argument that Foles has played well in big games, and largely he has.
Yes.
And thus we're going to pick him over Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make a lot of logical sense.
It doesn't, though? Like, whose brain looks better so far?
Whose brain?
Just tell me, whose brain has looked better? Who makes crisper reads? Who distributes the ball better? Who doesn't? Who looks smarter there?
I would take that argument and say it took Foles a while to get to that point.
I'm just saying right this moment, who looks better?
I like Carson Wentz. Yeah. I really do. I'm not going to go all lawyer
on you and use your answer against you. I'm just saying, though, at this moment, like, Foles has proven that he can...
Nick Foles
can use his brain better than Carson Wentz at this moment. Carson Wentz hasn't proven that he's got that kind of brain.
I can hesitatingly agree with that.
Okay.
But I would say that Nick Foles is one of the, I don't know, top 25 quarterbacks in the United States of America.
Damn, that's sexy.
But Carson Wentz is one of the most promising young quarterbacks in the NFL. So where if you got a dispersal draft, like he's going in the top five or six.
Is he as promising as Marcus Mariota was a couple years ago?
I would say more.
Yeah.
More. He was going to be MVP
just
last
just
year.
Checking.
Was he
checking.
Was going to be the MVP.
You finally
of the
gave
week.
Up on Marcus Mariota this year.
I have not.
Oh my God.
I have not. I've not given up. I'm not saying he's going to be good.
I'm out. He has a 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio in 2018.
That was an improvement.
This is a year where, like, I could go out there and have a better 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio.
If Nick Foles was hearing this conversation, he would have retired like he thought he was going to do a couple years ago. He came back and then he won a Super Bowl. Marcus Mariota is somebody. Be patient. You got to be patient.
I'm all for the Titans remaining patient with Marcus Mariota.
Same.
I have patience.
Plus, let's remember, he's a nice guy, and that somehow matters. Let's not forget. Everybody remember. Listen to this. Marcus Mariota, I have no doubt he's a nice guy, but this is how small the NFL media thinks of NFL players. They'll write stories about how great a guy Marcus Mariota is and cite things like he pushes chairs back in at the table, and he also gives friends rides to practice.
That's important.
And they act like, oh my gosh, he's a saint. But then you guys all think we're scum. You think we're all scum.